Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. Okay, I did it. All with your support. 50 episodes. It should be a party. Alas, not this time. Maybe for the 100th. Some exciting news, well, for me anyway. My lodge was just invited to a special dinner at the New Illinois Scottish Rite Building. I'm excited to go, and also thinking more about going ahead with joining the Scottish Rite as well. I'll keep you all posted on that. Also, I wanted to share with you all that I'm working on a new video. My vision for this is pretty epic, and I hope to get it done soon. The only issue is that I need to do much of the filming and photography myself. So be patient, and as soon as it's ready, you'll all know. This week's show, I was going to be dark, as we sometimes say for the holiday, but I had some extra time and thought, hey, let's just go ahead and do it anyway, which is why last week ended with a 4th of July message, and also why this week will as well. Some of you have asked where the Midnight Freemason has gone, and the answer is, of course, nowhere. It's alive and well at midnightfreemason.blogspot.com, and toddecreason.blogspot.com is now Brother Todd's main forum, which still has great Masonic content, but in addition, news about our friend and brother. Also, some of you have been asking me about these clocks. Well, I have started a little venture in building Masonic clocks. I'll post pictures of those soon. This week, I have a piece from the Illinois Knight Templar magazine entitled Masonic Templary, Modern Guardians of the Authentic Grail Tradition. And we'll go ahead and read that now. Masonic Templary, Modern Guardians of the Authentic Grail Tradition by Sir Knight P.D. Newman. Ever since the early to mid-13th century, when German knight Wolfram von Eisenbach identified them as such in his epic poem, Percival, the Legendary Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon, or, as they are more popularly known, the Knights Templar, have been closely associated with the mythical Knights of the Holy Grail. In the paragraphs which follow, we will examine some rather compelling evidence which suggests that von Eschenbach's association between these two chivalric orders may have influenced the development of the Templar knighting ceremony as it is currently practiced by the commandery of the York Rite of Freemasonry. It is on this account that the author has come to view Masonic Templary as something of a modern guardian of the authentic Grail tradition. Let us take a moment to briefly touch upon some of what it is that the Grail tradition actually entails. It will also be helpful to examine a couple of the primary literary precursors which some scholars believe may have contributed to the rich lore surrounding the Grail tradition. The Holy Grail is most commonly depicted as the cup from which Jesus Christ drank during his Last Supper, prior to being crucified. According to the legend, this cup was later used by Joseph of Arimathea, the secret disciple of Christ, who donated the tomb wherein Jesus was laid following his crucifixion. The cup was used to collect a mixture of blood and water which flowed from the laceration in Jesus' side, made by the lance or spear of the Roman soldier, Longinus. Being thus sanctified, the cup was then said to have been imbued with miraculous virtues such as curative powers and the ability to make barren land fertile, and it was for the purpose of preserving this sacred vessel that the Order of the Knights of the Holy Grail was originally founded. This, of course, has been a severely abbreviated recapitulation of the complex cycle which constitutes the Grail tradition, but the author is nonetheless content that the above will prove sufficient for the present purpose. As a literary precursor to this tale, several scholars have sought to identify the legend of the Holy Grail with the Welsh legend of King Brian, the mythical king of Britain, and his magical cauldron, the latter of which was said, similar to the qualities attributed to the Holy Grail, to be able to mysteriously restore the dead to life. Magical characteristics such as this were not limited to King Bran's cauldron alone, but were also attributed to Bran himself. According to the Mabinogion, an ancient book of Welsh folklore, after realizing his impending fate, the king ordered that his head be severed and returned to Britain, where miraculously it continued to speak and in some cases even prophesy. After some 80 years, the head ceased speaking, at which time it was taken to a place called White Hill and buried facing the direction of France in order to protect the British from French invasion. The legend even goes on to declare that it was none other than King Arthur, the same who features prominently in the Grail tradition, who recovered the skull from its place of rest. In more recent times, certain scholars have sought to align the Holy Grail with the golden platter on which the severed head of St. John the Baptist was served to the dancing Salome by the remorseful King Herod. The reader is asked to note that in both of the cases cited, the object identified as a forerunner of the Holy Grail is directly associated with the motif of a severed head. The Knights Templar were formed in the 12th century for the noble purpose of escorting Christians on their pilgrimages throughout the Holy Land during the Crusades. After inventing a system which is widely recognized as the forerunner of modern banking, the Templars grew exceedingly wealthy to the point that the powers that were, in example the crown and the tiara, sought to relieve them of their riches, and in 1307 a statement was issued by the debt-ridden King Philip IV of France declaring the Templars to be heretics. A great many of them were subsequently arrested, interrogated, tortured, and executed. Their wealth then claimed by the greedy Philip. While no holy cup was reported to have ever been discovered amongst the Templars' treasures, the most widespread of the confessions allegedly made by the knights during their interrogation was the collective veneration of a mysterious severed head, reportedly called Baphomet, which was supposedly used by them during their ceremonies of initiation. According to Von Hammer, the word Baphomet is most likely a combination of the two Greek words Baph and Metis, the English translation of which is the baptism of wisdom. But, as we shall see, the use of the word baptism here may have less to do with the physical act of submerging the body and raising it up out of the water, and more to do with the ritualized act of imbibing of a certain libation from a sacred cup, such is the case in the Corpus Hermeticum, a collection of writings attributed to Hermes Trismegistus, the famed author of the Tabula Smaragdina, or Emerald Tablet, wherein we read the following. Reason indeed among all men hath deity distributed, but mind not yet. Not that he grudgeth any, for grudging cometh not from him, but hath its place below within the souls of men who have no mind. He willed my son to have it, set up on the midst for souls, just as we were a prize. He filled a mighty cup with it, and sent it down, joining a herald to it, to whom he gave command to make this proclamation to the hearts of men. Baptize thyself with this cup's baptism. What heart can do so? Thou that hast faith, thou canst ascend to him that hath sent down the cup. Thou that doesn't know for what thou didst come into being. Thus we see that the term quote-unquote baptism can be a reference to the well-known ritual of bodily submersion in water, and more obscurely a sacred cup or libation. Baphomet, therefore, the severed head allegedly venerated by the Templars, may in reality be a cryptic reference to a secret initiatory rite known to them as the baptism of wisdom, the mysterious proceedings of which have very probably made use of the ritualistic cup or libation. Interestingly, von Eschenbach specifically refers to the Knights of the Holy Grail as baptized men. As demonstrated above, the lore surrounding the Grail tradition is intimately connected with legends involving severed heads. These two seemingly separate themes, a sacred cup and a severed head, would appear somewhat irreconcilable if it was not for the historical precedent provided by the potentially shocking ritual once observed by the Goths of Scandinavia, who, according to the research of English Freemason Reverend George Oliver, were prone to drink alcoholic libations from the caps of human skulls, thereby uniting perfectly the theme of the sacred cup or libation with that of the skull or severed head. Paraphrasing from Oliver's 1840 work, The History of Initiation, Albert Pike, 33rd Degree, explains that the initiatory rituals of this Eastern Germanic tribe included a long probation of the fasting and mortifications, circular processions, and many fearful tests and trials. The candidate was obliged upon a naked sword, as is still the custom in the rite modern, and sealed his obligation by drinking mead out of a human skull. Turning our attention to the Far East, we find that the ritual motif of drinking spirits from a human skull is by no means limited to the West. This practice also plays a central role in the ceremonial observances of the reclusive Shiva-worshipping Agora of India, as well as the remote Vajrayana Buddhists of Tibet, both of whom preserve the curious rite of imbibing spirits from a sacred kapala or skull cap. These kapalas are often employed by the practitioners of Vajrayana Buddhism for the additional purpose of making religious offerings to the deific Dharma Palace, who themselves are frequently depicted as bearing these strange yet fascinating relics. The word Dharmapala, literally translated, means defender of the faith, which itself is a phrase that should be particularly meaningful to every Masonic Templar. Sir Knight Friedrich Schade, in his welcomed article, The Quest for the Holy Grail and the Modern Knights Templar, provides an outline of several other similarities between what he calls the Templar Hollows and the Lesser Hollows of the Grail tradition. The Lesser Hollows of the Grail tradition are described as being certain sacred relics for which the Grail Knights are searching in addition to the Holy Grail. The similarities between the so-called Templar Hollows and the Lesser Hollows of the Grail tradition include, among other things, the dish of bread, which is the food given to the pilgrim on his arrival, and the skull of mortality, with which the novice undertakes a year of penance, and with which the imprecations are made. Sir Nightshade goes on to say that there are several other hollows and sacred signs in the Templar tradition. Some of the lesser hollows of the Grail cycle are suggested here, such as the Templar crucifix with the nails prominently displayed thereon. There is the knight's sword, which is to be wielded in defense of the faith, and also his shield, all of which are beautifully explained in the quotation from St. Paul. They may not necessarily come directly from the Grail legend, but they certainly evoke many aspects of that tradition and resonate as hollows in their own right. Thus, we see that von Eschenbach's identification of the mythical Knights of the Holy Grail with the Knights Templar may very well have had more than a minor influence on the development of the Templar knighting ceremony as it currently is practiced by the commander of the York Rite of Freemasonry. Because of the probability of said influence, it is the author's opinion that Masonic Templary can rightly be called a modern guardian of the authentic Grail tradition, furnished with all that entails. This is true, even for the candidate who sits silently contemplating in the grim chamber of reflection at the commencement of the Templar ceremony, where the human skull present there still has the potential to exhibit that miraculous power of prophetic speech attributed to the severed head of the mythical King Bran, surrounded oftentimes with an oracular message such as, "I was what you are," and more importantly, "I am what you will be." Does not the skull in the chamber of reflection speak something of our fate to us all? Is not the bitter cup of death from which every man must sooner or later partake? And again, that's from the Knight Templar, July 2012, number 7. And if you have the mobile app, that magazine will be the PDF download this week.
Freemason Conspiracies.
This is a piece I lifted from the Freemasons for Dummies website, and I'll first describe a photo that is shown of Michael Jackson's doctor wearing what appears to be a Masonic collar, but you really can't tell. Here's your Masonic Michael Jackson conspiracy theory, and you thought you'd never read a Michael Jackson story here, again referring to the Freemasons for Dummies website. It seems that Jackson's live-in doctor, Dr. Conrad Murray, who is at the center of the controversy over drug injections, is alleged to be a Freemason. According to a Fox News report, the money was one of the main reasons Murray decided to go on tour with Jackson, says Reverend Floyd Williams, 80, who is Murray's friend and patient. Murray had developed a booming concierge business. He was jetting off to see patients in New York and Washington while building his practice in Las Vegas. 3 years ago, Murray joined the Freemasonry, the international fraternal society that dates back to the early 17th century. His friends say that this new network galvanized his growing side business. Note what appears to be a Masonic officer's collar resting on Murray's shoulders. No knowledge at this time whether he is a member of a mainstream lodge, a Prince Hall lodge, or one of the literally hundreds of irregular, unrecognized grand lodges, quote-unquote, that are scattered around the country. The Prince Hall Research Group, the Flaxix Society Commission on Bogus Freemasonry, lists at least 8 irregular, unrecognized grand lodges with Las Vegas addresses. No one knows yet, but I'm certain the world's news organizations are hot on the trail. So, welcome to all of you folks swooping in here who have Googled Freemasons killed Michael Jackson in a search of the Masonic conspiracy. And members of the press, please buy my book. If everybody else is going to cash in on Jackson's death, I might as well reap a little as well. And again, that was from the Freemasons for Dummies website. This week's famous Freemason is Samuel Huntington. Now, before I read the piece from the Grand Lodge of Ohio, I should also like to say that there is debate that Samuel Huntington was actually, and get this, the first president of the United States. How? Well, he was the president of the highest organization in the land at the time of the first use of the wording United States of America. So on a technicality, they may be correct. Sorry, George, but guess what? Samuel Huntington? Yeah. He was also a Freemason. Born in Coventry, Connecticut on October 4, 1765, and orphaned at an early age, Samuel Huntington was adopted by his famous uncle, for whom he was named. due to bearing the same name as his uncle, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence, a prominent lawyer and businessman, and for 10 years governor of Connecticut. They have often been confused, one for the other. After 3 years at Dartmouth College, he transferred to Yale University, graduating in 1785. Upon becoming governor in 1786, the older Samuel appointed his nephew as one of his military aides and an assistant to the adjutant general. He studied law in his uncle's office at Norwich and was admitted to the bar in 1793. On June 3, 1795, Samuel appeared at a meeting of Wooster Lodge in Colchester, Connecticut. His reputation and character being well known and above reproach, the bylaws were suspended and a ballot taken. The ballot was clear, and Samuel Huntington was forthwith initiated as entered apprentice. The following day, at a special communication of Wooster Lodge, he was passed to the degree of fellowcraft and raised a master mason. This unusual chain of events became clearer when it was pointed out that just 4 days later, he was elected secretary of the newly chartered Somerset at Norwich, Connecticut. In May of 1796, he represented Somerset Lodge at the annual communication of the Grand Lodge of Connecticut, carrying the junior warden's proxy. He became interested in the opportunities the Western Reserve Territory afforded, and visited Ohio in the summer of 1800. The following year, he brought his family, consisting of his wife, the former Hannah Huntington, a distant cousin, whom he'd married in 1791, two sons, and Miss Margaret Cobb, a governess, and their personal belongings to Ohio. Traveling by covered wagon, he settled initially near Youngstown and soon thereafter in the village of Cleveland. His law practice and real estate transactions soon established him as a man with future. In 1802, he was a member of the State Constitutional Convention, later elected to the State Senate and chosen the first Speaker of the General Assembly, as well as the Chief Justice of the state. He was later elected governor, serving from 1808 to 1810. In 1808, he moved his Masonic membership to Erie Lodge No. 47, now Old Erie Lodge No. 3, later affiliating with Scioto Lodge No. 2, now Scioto No. 6, on January 4, 1809. On January 5, 1809, the fourth day of the first annual communication of the Grand Lodge of Ohio, Samuel Huntington was elected and installed Most Worshipful Grand Master, thus serving simultaneously as governor of the state of Ohio and Grand Master. During the War of 1812, he was commissioned a colonel of the United States Army, serving also as paymaster for the army in the Northwest. Brother Huntington died June 9, 1817, of injuries received while supervising the repairs on the road from his estate to Fairport Harbor. Having served Masonry and his country with distinction, he was buried with Masonic ceremonies by Meridian Orb Lodge No. 10, now extinct, of Painesville. On June 9, 1917, his body was entered in the Evergreen Cemetery, Division 3, Lot 50 and 51, Painesville, Ohio. If you'd like to know more about the possibility of Samuel Huntington being the true first president of the United States, whether that is technically correct or not, Google it. It's pretty good reading. That's it for this week. Remember to find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're on Google Plus, and you can email us at the address wcypodcast@gmail.com. Check out the website wcypodcast.blogspot.com for links to the video channels, Pinterest, and links to the apps, which will let you listen via a streaming feed rather than having to sync every Sunday night before work. Enjoy your week, everyone. And again, happy 4th. 1776 wasn't so long ago. Think about that and how much we've accomplished in a short time. For Whence Came You? I'm Robert Johnson.